Blog Talk Radio.
Mi chiamo Afurakanu Afurakaitnu Eneye Eguada Medinde Ojirafo Kwesi Ra Nehem Pata Akan Akwamumai Namaruka TV Mu Ojirafo. That means greetings to all Afurakani Afurakaitni people, meaning Africans, black people. Today is Eguada Day, Marketplace Day. My name is Ojirafo. Kwesi Radnahem Bata Akan, Akwamu Mine, Amaruka Tifi Mu, Yakwamu Nation in North America. So we have a couple of announcements, and then we're going to get to our guest who's on the line. This coming Memenida Saturday, we will be in Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Sankofa Festival. It's an all-day festival in Philadelphia from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. There will be vendors, cultural presentations, a number of different activities. It's a free event, outdoor event, of course. We are honored to have been invited to be the keynote speaker for that particular event. So you can look on the website, odirafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F, as in free, O.com. Download the flyer for that, and as well as the upcoming events as well, under the Guamukasa page, the public speaking page, as well as the front page of the website, when you scroll through the index section and the introduction section, you'll see the links to where we will be at, and that's the next event coming up, this Memenida, this Saturday, August 9th, Philadelphia, 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. That's an event that the community can come out and support, check out the vendors, interact with the, you know, black businesses, support the black businesses, and so forth. Okay, so tonight we want to introduce our guest, Eguada, our show every Awukuda, Akuada Wednesday. Egua means marketplace in the Akan language. So we promote black businesses, Afurakani, Afurakaitni, or African black businesses that are producing products and services that are beneficial for the Afurakani, Afurakaitni, or African black community, but also those business owners who share our Afurakani, Afurakaitni, or African ancestral values. So we have on our live line, our guest is Rekit Kajara Nyeya Nebehet. She is the founder of Ra Seki, which is Kemetic Reiki. She's written a number of books, including Ra Seki Level 1, Ra Seki Level 2. And we just want to get right into it. Michelle Wolf, are you on the live line, sister?
Hetep, I am on the line.
Hetep, Michelle Wolf, and we just want to say Merase for honoring us with your presence on the show tonight. We just wanted to, share what you're doing with the community. You've been a healer for a number of years, so we just want you to introduce yourself, what you've been doing with regard to Ra Seki. I know you have a number of books out, about 5 books out now. You've been teaching, going to different cities, teaching, healing, and everything else. So just share with our listening audience who you are, how you began to develop just the healing practices in general, and then we're going to get into the specifics of Ra Seki.
All right. And I have to first give thanks and honor to my great and noble ancestors and to the great Mother Sekhmet for her guidance and to the Creator, known by many names. And I thank you, Madase, for inviting me on the show this evening. I am Rekit Kajara Nyeya, and I'm the founder of the Ra Seki Arts Temple. I'm a healer, a natural healer, a teacher, a mother. I am a sister, a nature lover, a priestess, and as community activist. And I began this walk, I would say when I was 16, I became very sick and I was led to heal myself using my hands, using the power of prayer, and I was in a lot of pain, and I actually relieved myself of the pain, and it never came back. And so at the age of 16, I felt that I had some gift. I wasn't sure exactly what it was, but I had an idea. And later in life, as I was moving through my spiritual journey, I became connected with some very great teachers, Queen Afua and Dr. Laya the Africa and others. And I began to connect with the Neteru and specifically with the goddess Sekhmet. And basically, I was spiritually led to do this work. I learned how to do Reiki from my teacher was Raisa Kim out of the Bronx, New York, back in the year 2000. He told me that I had it and attuned me into Reiki level 1, 2, and 3 in one weekend. And from that point, I began to practice, and I was also doing Sacred Women Gateways and facilitating them for other women. So I got a good bit of experience with working with the Neteru and with women in healing. And it led me to be charged to share and teach energy healing to our people, because this is something that is specific for us and is something that we can use to help relieve us from past trauma in this lifetime and other lifetimes. And it's something very natural for us because it's a practice that was used by our ancient ancestors. So it has been a divine journey. In doing this work, I've been teaching Kemetic Reiki since 2007. And so during that time, I've probably attuned over 200 people. I have facilitated over 10 retreats in which we do purification rites. We share lessons. And we also do healing work on those who come participate. So there's many breakthroughs, and I've seen, and I guess I would say that's the greatest reward, to actually see someone come through something that they've been holding for years, sometimes things they didn't even know they were holding. So I know I probably answered that in a couple questions in that.
No, we appreciate that. So I want to get into all of that. So we're going to try to get it all in the next 2 to 3 hours. So now you talked about when you were 16 and then after that experience and you instinctively were drawn to use your hands to heal. So what was the next step on the journey? How did you go from that point to connecting with some people dealing with some form of traditional or Afro-Akani or African holistic healing? How did you get to that point? What was the journey from the time you were 16 to the point where you connected with some people to start honing your skills?
I went to school in Tallahassee. I was taking classes at Florida State, but I was in school in life at FAMU because that I lived with people and I had all my social activities were associated with Florida A&M. And I was a part of a healing, well, it was a cultural group, the Student Alliance for Cultural Development. And that was my first initiation going through that organization. And it was a book club and a group that was very active in the community. And so I would say that was something that really helped to open my eyes to a lot of things and to a higher consciousness. And from that point, I actually did also meet some elders who actually gave me the name Asada, which I carried for many years, and taught me to fast and taught me how to make jewelry and, you know, taught me many things about our history and from ancient times to the present times, or I would say to the current times at that time. And so it was a path that was definitely divinely led, and I took baby steps and graduated into motherhood and began to study about healing, and I had some elder women who took the time to teach me how to make and prepare vegetarian food and how to prepare other items that I could use, body butter and salve and soap and all kind of natural products that I could use to take care of myself and my family. And I began to study herbs, and I was also exposed to many healers, massage therapists, energy healers, craft persons, and artists of all different kinds. And so I learned a lot in a little time, I would say. And then I became connected with different spiritual organizations, spiritual houses. I was initiated as a general initiate in a Khan house. I began to go through the process of learning and studying with Native Americans and learning how to facilitate sweat lodges as well as participating in sweat lodges myself. I also, as I said before, had a time where I facilitated sacred woman gateways, and that definitely helped to open my connection with Queen Afua and so many more healers from that East Coast energy. And I learned a lot about the comedic sciences. And as I said, it's just been, you know, I guess following divine guidance. When I would hear, you know, go with this one or try this one, I would be open and I would try it. It might not always work out the way that I wanted it to, but I definitely learned lessons and was able to continue to move forward, you know, with learning, expanding, and also using the information that I received. So I've always been one to be active, you know, when I receive information. I can't just sit on it. I'm going to teach somebody or practice or something, you know. So I would say that was a big part as well in my movement.
Okay. So when you connected with Queen Afua and you went through the sacred woman process, was that around the time? I know you mentioned in the book about being involved in the Yoruba tradition as well. Was that around the same time?
No. Well, actually, I was connected to the Yoruba culture for a few years before I was initiated, but it was many years after my time with Queen Afua through a Yoruba initiation. So I am also a practicing Sango priestess as well. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now I know you said that once you connected with Queen Afua and you were you went through the sacred woman piece with her, but then you started facilitating the sacred woman groups. And I remember you saying that that's when, you know, Sekhmet really became more prominent with you. So what was that experience like with dealing with the sacred woman groups and facilitating those groups and getting connected more intensely with the Ntoro, and so forth?
Okay. I actually, when I received the Sacred Woman book, it came out in the year 2000, if I remember correctly, and I was just really charged to begin to invite women to my house to go through the gateways. So we did, and at one point I had 30 women or more coming through my house, going through the Sacred Women exercises. And then I met Queen Afua and actually went through the gateways with Abut Ma'at in D.C. And during that time, I really had some spectacular magical experiences that stood out to me. And one is I remember going through the gateway of Sekhmet and hearing about her energy. She likes red, the fire energy. We were working with a pendulum that particular day, and the earrings that I had on were like a perfect pendulum. And I just remember saying to myself, well, isn't that something? I decided to put these on this particular day, not really knowing why, but I remember that standing out. And then I believe a week later, I went to buy a statue for my altar. And, you know, the gateways, there are 9 different gateways, so there's many different neteru that you could choose from. And I was actually looking for a ma'at or heteru or, you know, an offset statue. But on that particular day, I think my choices were like Sekhmet and maybe Anubis. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, I like Sekhmet, healing. I'm with that. You know, I'm going to go ahead and take this statue. And actually, that's the same statue that I have sitting on my altar right now. But it was just, you know, little things like that, which is pretty much how Spirit has worked with me throughout my life. The small things that you might not notice, but yet if you notice them, it could lead you to so much more. And then just really learning about myself, being a fiery person, I've always been known to be one to help others. I remember when I was younger, my mother, when I was in college, and I would tell her about certain friends I had, and she would say, why do you always have these friends who need help with something? What's wrong with you? Why are you always attracted to these people? And so I still do, you know, but that those kind of things, I've always been attracted to crystals and herbs, you know, sticks, kind of in a funny way. And, you know, Sekhmet does work and connect with everything in nature to heal. So it's been a blessing to be able to see myself, see that goddess within myself, and connect with that divine force, the powerful energy that Sekhmet is. It's definitely been a blessing to my life and my path.
Definitely. So now moving through that phase, and then you got to the point where you studied Reiki with an elder, you said, in New York, correct?
Yes, the elder was from New York, and he actually came to us in Virginia to teach the Reiki class, because at that time, not many black people were talking about Reiki. In fact, we had people who were laughing at us because we wanted to take the Reiki class, and, you know, we thought it was going to be 10 women, and then it only showed up to be maybe 2 women out of 10 who actually came. But it was a blessing, and my teacher was actually a student of the comedic sciences, so he taught me the opening of the way, and his lessons also included a 21-day fast, especially because I had gotten that master attunement. He really did give me a few extra lessons, many of which I still share, and also a full understanding of energy. And so from that point, I basically had to practice and work with people and learn to understand energy more. And as I said, there weren't many black people who were interested or even knew anything about Reiki. So that was a challenge. I remember, like, trying to make deals with people to let them, can I please work on you? You know, I'll make you a meal if you come by and let me practice on you, you know, that kind of thing. And I did continue to work, and I continued to do the work with the sacred women and continue to work with my family and those I was close to. And my connection with Sekhmet began to grow deeper, and she began to speak to me. She began to come to me in dreams, and, you know, I had visions, and I was charged directly to begin to teach energy healing to our community. And she said that the more of us who are working with our energy, the quicker we'll see a positive change in our community. And a big part of that is us also restoring ma'at to ourselves and to our ways. And so I began to go through, I guess, as I said, a series of visions and just hearing the voices telling me, you know, how to set this class up and how I should do it and, you know, everything that should be included. And Raseki was born, even to the name. I remember writing out the package and just saying, like, you know, what can we call it? And feeling that energy of Ra, and I just heard it, Ra, you know. It's not the energy of the universe. It is, but we call that energy Ra. You're dealing with the energy of Ra, you know. And then the Seki, that energy of our own power, our Sekim, which is something that we have to know about, because when we don't, then other people can manipulate it or throw it off. You know, we have to be aware and conscious of ourselves fully. And so understanding that Sekim and that power is very important. And so I believe I got us to that point going through the story.
Right. So, and I remember you were talking about how, you know, they basically showed you that this is a practice that we've been doing for thousands of years. And them calling it Reiki, of course, is just their corruption of our title. But you were basically saying your Nsamanfo, your ancestresses and ancestors were directing you to reclaim a practice that, you know, was practiced in ancient Kemet and just across the continent.
Yes, yes. The visions that I had were visions showing me that connection, and I began to see pictures and have actual memories, I would say, of this kind of healing, which is what they were calling Reiki, and that was definitely a big part of that charge to restore our culture, restore this part of our healing work to ourselves and to its original state. And so that is what we have been working to do, reclaiming the language of it and understanding it on a higher level, because we know all the sciences come from ancient Kemet, and this practice is something that's been left on the walls of the pyramids. Even those, you know, we can't imagine the ones that were destroyed and all the information that we can't see. But from what we can see in the stories and the texts, there is talk about the Rekhit, and there's talk about Sekhem and Sekhmet and even the chakras and even the hand positions, you know, are left in some of those pictures as well. And so, yes, that is why it is so important for our community and our people, because it is something that will work specifically for us, especially when we're using our own symbols and our own words and our own prayers and our own spirit guides. And that was part of those lessons and visions that I was getting. And that's part of what we are doing, restoring the ancient culture of healing.
And I want to mention to people, like, for example, in the sister's book, Raseki, Volume 1, and you should get, we put the website in the chat room, rasekihealing.com. So in Raseki, Volume 1, on page 7, there's a picture from a mural inside the tomb of Tutankhamen, so-called King Tut. And he's standing there, and the Abosom, the divinity goddess Nut, is standing in front of him. And if you look at her hands, there are electromagnetic wave energy hovering above the palms of her hands. So when people, you know, very often people look at these murals and don't see something like that. But it's there. And then when we look at, as she also mentions in the book, you mentioned how that goes from not only ancient Kemet, through Afuraka, at Africa, all across the continent, but then even into America, and we just using the English language, we start saying, well, we're going to lay hands, but we've been laying hands and healing people for forever, right? So I want to get into, you mentioned like the, basically the intergenerational trauma that people are suffering. And how does Rav Seki help that, like you said, even from past lives, the things that, people have suffered in a previous lifetime, and when they make their transition and they return, they never healed those wounds, and people are still carrying things from not just childhood, but a previous incarnation. So how does Rav Seki work with that?
We have several ways to work with that energy, but we have to know that energy transcends time and space. So just with our intentions and just doing aura clearings, you can clear energy from past lifetimes. In just a regular healing session, you could clear energy from a past lifetime. And I can give you an example of a sister who had neck pain for many, many, many years, and she did not know why. And in the healing session, that we had the vision that this woman had been hung in a past lifetime. And so clearing that energy and helping her to release that energy, even though she wasn't aware of it in this lifetime, her body still held the pain and the memory of it, or her spirit, I should say. So it carried on. And so using the hands, the power of the prayer and the words and crystals, and enough energy can definitely move that and more. And so we also use the power, as I said, the power of prayers. For instance, we have many people who, you know, in a certain time, they would curse on others, and they would not only curse you, but your whole family line. And so a lot of families seem to be under something of a spell. And in fact, it could be a spell. And so with energy healing, with the proper words, the proper prayers, the intentions, and calling on the right energies, even those kind of links and bonds and ties can be broken. And it's using ancient techniques, some of which have been carried through West Africa. Some have been carried on, as you said, even into the churches with people laying on hands and praying. You cannot understand in the power of one.
Wait, your phone was going out a little bit. I think you might have to talk directly into the phone.
I said we can't underestimate the power of prayer and the power of intention. And if one has the proper tools and enough ashe or sekhem power, they can break it, you know. So we are just having people working with their ancestors and remembering and pouring libation and praying and calling on their ancestors' names. Every time we do that, we help to elevate our ancestors. As we elevate their spirits, they can help to elevate the whole family line. And so it can work, as I said, in many different levels. That is one aspect of Rav Seki. We help people to reconnect with their ancestors. In fact, that's one of the first steps. The first one is working with my aunt, learning about energy, and then you must learn how to work with your own ancestors, because they are going to guide you in the right way. They're going to help you as you help to heal yourself, and they'll help, you know, as I said, the whole family. So that energy healing, even though you can't see energy, you can't also you can't underestimate its power and what you can do when you understand it.
Definitely. In fact, the way you were describing it with the, you know, previous lifetimes and like a sister being hung, or just saying like the spell that some people have over a family, like in the Akan tradition, when people are called Abayifo, which is a term that they often translate as witches. Now, that just means they have bayi, they have a higher psychic power. Some people can use it for positive things. Of course, some people use it for negative things. But the Abayifo the ones who are using it for negative purposes, what they'll often say is that the only people that they attack when they say they'll consume their spirits or take their spirits at nighttime or attack a child or, you know, attack somebody in their sleep or cause illnesses and all that kind of thing, they only do it within their specific matricline, matrilineal blood circle. Like, they don't operate outside of their blood circle. They only hit the people within their own blood circle. In fact, they don't really have the capacity to attack people outside of their blood circle. So, and those people, when they make their transition, they're still the same kind of negative criminal type spirits, and they will still try to attach to people in their blood circle who are still living. And then that becomes an intergenerational, what in English would be called a spell, but these negative spirits still causing problems. But then, like you said, since you all work, you know, through Wakraseki, working with the ancestresses and ancestors and elevating them, then they can repel those negative spirits and, you know, restore some balance. I wanted to ask you, because you were talking about how, and this is very different, but for people who are familiar with, you know, quote-unquote Reiki, you're talking about something much more intense, dealing directly with people's ancestresses and ancestors in their blood circle, working with the divinities of both of them, connected with them. It sounds like the way you're doing it, you're engaged in a form of divination when you're laying hands, when you're healing people through your process. Like when you take somebody through a session, it's like using your hands to divine for them. As opposed to using shells, you're like using your hands. And I know you use pendulums as well. So, in fact, can you talk about the pendulums, but then also about just the way you do Raseki is like a divination session in and of itself.
All right. It is, I would say, definitely some divination involved in it. And when you are sensitive enough, you can find out a lot about a person with your hands. So we do have to use our hands to connect with our client's aura and to connect with their energy. And as I said, I find the more experienced practitioners are the ones who can actually begin to hear, you know, those intimate details or messages that need to be relayed to the client. So there's, and then, of course, because we work with spirit guides so closely, there's a lot of divination involved in a lot of messages that are relayed during a healing session and otherwise, sometimes just during a conversation. But we also do work with pendulums. And pendulums are, I like to say, they can be some very divine, personal little spiritual tools. So they work with the principle of dowsing, and they read energy. And you have to have something that is pointed and something, it has to be pointed at the tip and has to be able to swing. And so the pendulum can read positive or negative energy. And it can also be used to program things. So pendulums can be used to hypnotize people and to also shift the energy in a room, also to shift or clear energy on one's aura, and to also work and to balance, balance and activate one's aritu or chakra points. So that is a tool that we use as practitioners in our healing sessions. We also find them to be very useful for other things, as I said, for clearing energy and programming things. So I can use a pendulum around my car to help program it so that it'll work powerfully and not give me any problems. It's a way to help send energy as well.
Okay. And I also wanted to ask, going back to the piece with the healing and the intergenerational piece, what kind of experiences have you had with regard to sisters who have had abortions? What kind of experiences often, you know, arise when you're doing a healing session through Raseki, and you come in contact with that kind of situation?
We do often feel that energy of a lot of different women hold a lot of things in their wombs. So the womb is an area that we have to work on often. And we'll find that people are holding other people's energy in their wombs from years and years. And then when it comes to women who have had abortions, it definitely can alter the energy of the womb. And also, if there had not been any sort of closure for the spirit of the aborted child, that spirit of the child I've also found can be an influence, sometimes positively, sometimes negatively, in the woman's life and with her other children if she has them. So I have had experiences of having to help to really soothe the womb from that pain of the abortion and having to help also clear that energy, because many times women don't get to even release and speak about the abortion the way that they want to. And then, you know, a lot of times the abortion can affect the relationship. So then there's also that layer of energy because of the relationship might not, you know, being able to continue. And then, of course, as I said, the energy of that child, that spirit of the child itself, has to be given a sense of peace so that they could transcend and move on and not become a negative influence in the person's life.
Okay. So I want to let people know, if you have a question, if you're on the phone and you have a question or a comment, you can hit the number 1 so you can raise your hand. And if you are in the chat room, you can, of course, post your questions or comments. If you are not, if you're not logged in, if you're just a guest in the chat room, you can't interact. You're going to have to log in. If you don't have a login username, you can just create one very quickly. You can log in, and then you can interact in the chat room. So, okay. Oh, actually, looks like we have a caller right here. Hold on 1 second. Okay, Michiawo, number 7054, you had a question or a comment for our guest?
I had a question about, you said, you know, our sisters hold a lot of energy in their womb. How does it affect a sister, you know, spiritually and emotionally, after she's had a hysterectomy?
Okay. We also have found the hysterectomy can definitely affect the woman's energy because of the loss of that organ, which is such a powerful and important organ for women. And so, you know, how we see the effect of the energy in a negative way is usually in the woman's attitude. You might see it coming through in a form of depression, or it might come through with an overeating or some other kind of addictive habit. Or, you know, if a woman or a person, I would say, doesn't find a way to deal with stuff, then usually we'll look to a negative alternative or a self-destructive behavior. Or, as I said, it could just be a negative emotion that is being expressed because of those feelings. And with that loss, it's like a loss. Losing the womb, you know, you have to go through that grieving period or that mourning period. But then with all things, you also have to come around to that place of acceptance, to the place of forgiveness. The woman might feel some sort of guilt for not taking better care of herself, and, you know, she would have to process and work through those aspects of herself. And there are many things, you know, that can be done, especially enhancing the more feminine side of oneself. So when we have a problem or a deficiency, the medicine is to bring it to balance, is to, you know, fill it with something as a substitute, but a positive substitute. So with her losing that womb, then her medicine would be to do more female type things so that she could feel that she's still a woman, you know. Getting the hair done in a natural way, we suggest and encourage, or just taking time to do something special like a nice hot bath. Some women don't get an opportunity to do that. Getting a nice massage or a foot rub, you know, something to treat herself in a positive way and to encourage that feminine energy and that feminine power to come back, because basically that's, you know, what that process that she's going through.
Okay. Respect.
All right. And thank you. Yes, majestic.
Okay, made out safe for the call. Okay. And I had a question. You brought up depression and the way people, you know, deal with things. And very often what happens in our community, people are, when they're going through depression or if they have some form of mental illness or whatever, they'll either, quote-unquote, self-medicate, which means they, you know, become addicted to whether it's alcohol, cigarettes, other drugs, food, different things like that. They'll go to, some people will go to a therapist, they'll end up getting all kinds of psychotropic medications. Some of them, of course, go to church and get addicted to a fictional white character thinking he's going to solve the problems. So how have you been able to address, like, some experiences, like, things that you can share without, you know, of course, I know you can't share too much because of confidentiality, but somebody dealing with mental illness on one hand and on the other hand with, say, addiction, like an alcohol addiction or a smoking addiction, how were you able to use Rotseki to assist people with situations like that?
Well, Rotseki is all about restoring balance. And as you said, most of the time when people have those behaviors, it's because of some mental instability. And so Rotseki is a holistic practice. And understanding the mind, you know, we first have to make sure that it's not a nutritional deficiency that is affecting the mind and causing this imbalance. And then we will also look at the energy and the environment and the situation around the person and dealing with it. And we would definitely use healing sessions, but as I said, it's a holistic practice. So we would do a variety. When I speak to my clients, I usually have a list of exercises or homework assignments for them to do to help heal themselves. And so this is going to be a list that will include some reading, because we always encourage that you work with your mind. It'll include something to work with the body, exercising of some sort, and also taking care of your body in the way you eat. And then it will include something working with the spirit. So even with working with mental instabilities, the other thing that stands out is usually a spiritual imbalance. So sometimes people will have voices speaking to them, and, you know, they're not sure how to work with these voices, how to process them, where they're coming from, and so it makes them feel crazy, and then their mind slips into that zone. And but having that spiritual understanding can definitely help. I do have some clients and students who have a bipolar type thing, some who have gone through depression, including myself. And so I know that, you know, shifting your energy, exercising is a big thing. Eating properly is a big thing, but definitely connecting with your spirit. connecting with your own spirit, however you see to connect in an African way, in a positive way, dealing with my art or some ancestral-based, nature-based systems is what I found to be the most successful in bringing that energy into balance, because everything else is out of balance. So you have to have something, you know, dealing with nature, something like the earth, which is stable, and that helps to bring back, you know, bring yourself back. I've even heard that you can reprogram your mind just by going out into nature and not having a phone, not really speaking to many people, just eating natural foods, eating from the earth, and just being outside for a period of 30 days or more. It will reprogram and restart your mind. So, you know, working with nature is very important, even in balancing the mind. And then prayers, you know, doing that work, connecting with your spirit. There's so many ways that we could do that. And people do. Musicians and artists, you know, they are spiritual people. So dancing and playing music, reading positive spiritual books, being around spiritual people, praying, of course, meditating, doing yoga or any of those kind of practices, Tai Chi and those type of things, all of those things help to bring one's mind back and will help to relieve and balance those addictions and other issues and plagues that people have, which are still problems of the mind.
May I say, and I appreciate the way you all, you know, address the whole person. And just showing people, you know, through experience that everything we need to heal ourselves is within our own culture, within our own community, and we have that capacity, and that's, we really appreciate that. So now we want to show, let people know that it's not, you do sessions, but then you also train. So you train people on how to practice Raseki, but then you also train people, you have different levels of training, and you train people on how to become Raseki practitioners, not just healing themselves, but then also becoming practitioners and teachers as well. So let's talk about the whole training side, and just talking about the, you know, Raseki Arts Temple and the whole structure of that.
All right. So currently we have 5 levels of Raseki, and level 1 is focused on self-healing. So we know that in our community there are many of us who need help in balancing ourselves. A big part of our healing, as I said before, is restoring our culture, restoring our ancient ways. And so that is really what level 1 is all about. We start with the laws of Ma'at and the lessons so that more of us can understand how we should be acting, how we're supposed to treat ourselves and how we're supposed to treat others, because this is very important to our healing, and it helps to balance the mind. Every time we read those laws, it helps program that energy into our DNA so we could pass it on to our children. And we also can read it to our children so that they can learn from the beginning, you know, how they're supposed to behave and to have high morals as our ancestors did. And then we also move into, as I said, working with energy, learning about the aura, learning how to work with your chakras, what we call Aritu. You also work with spirit guides, your ancestors, and we begin talking about the goddess Sekhmet and her energy and how we can use it. And level 1 also teaches the basic hand positions for doing palm or energy healing. And so, you know, everyone has to start at level 1. We do have a lot of people who are Reiki practitioners who have taken the Usui style, but they too start at level 1 because our practice is very different from the Asian style. And then we have level 2, which is the certification class for those who want to become practitioners. So level one gives you tools and enough things so that you can heal yourself and work to balance your own energy, as well as your family and friends, the people that you're close to. And level two would give you greater tools so that you can learn to work with energy and healing others. And as I said, working with energy, you can't see it, so you think it's not a big thing, but it is a big thing, and it is helpful to have some good tools, to have tools of working with crystals, working with the pendulum, working with sound therapy. We work with aromatherapy as well. And level two, also, we do group healing sessions in Raseki. And the group healing sessions are very, very powerful and help people to move energy from many lifetimes, I would say, in one healing session. We also have other certain healing and clearing rituals that we do that we share in that level two class so that, you know, ones can be very confident when they're working with other people's energies. Then we have level three classes, and with that level, it is for people who want to be teachers. So for those who want to teach others how to do Raseki level one or level two, they can move to that level three and become teachers. And level three, it actually is a year-long process, and we actually just released the level three book. It's only going to be for our level three students at this time, but it is very powerful, full of information about working with energy on a higher level. It's more specific with lessons on divination and working with the spirits on a higher level, actually communicating with spirits, I should say, and working with more symbols and the planets and astrology and different, you know, different aspects of healing and energy. And we also have level four, which is the healer priestess level. And that, too, is a year-long process. And there are requirements for those who want to move to level three as well as level four. And we are training women to and men. I would say right now we only have sisters who have stepped forward, but to step into that place of being a healer priestess. So that is one who would be able to teach as well as heal others on a very high level. These women are going through some serious training as well as their own personal lessons that they are learning through spirit. And it's a beautiful, beautiful process. And we are also going to open up the level three healer priestess class for those who don't necessarily want to be teachers but just would like to work with the spirits. A priestess is essentially one who is dedicating themselves to serve the community and serve the spirit world. And so as a healer priestess, they're specific to healing and, as I said, in a holistic way, using herbs, using sound therapy, aromatherapy, crystal therapy, and probably a few more things. And then we also have the level five, which is the Rekit. I am currently the only Rekit right now. The Rekit is the keeper of the knowledge and the one who is the medium, works with the ancestors, brings forth the messages, and carries the energy, essentially. So we do have classes continually. I also do personal classes. I do public classes, and as I said, I have to also mention we have just recently opened to do spiritual development sessions, which is a one-on-one personal time for one to basically go through level one on a deeper level. So it's about a 9-week session. We meet once a week, and we go through level one, but on a more personal level. So there are, as I said, homework assignments and a lot of self-discovery in this process, and some specific and guided self-healing occurs. So this is something that we just recently started, and I just completed that first general initiate, and it was a beautiful session. I was thankful to have a very good sister who was good with finishing her homework, so I didn't have to fuss. But, yes, so I believe I have covered all of the classes that we're teaching at this time.
Okay, may I say, and there's a question in the chat room. The individual said, I am a Yusui Level 1 practitioner. I want to know how much different is it with Raseki? So comparing the Yusui Level 1 with Raseki.
It is very different. As I said, we do have the laws of Ma'at that we start with in Level 1. We do work with dietary practices. We do work with spirit guides and talk about libations and really communicating with our ancestors. We do also give the symbols that we work with are comedic symbols. And then we also, you know, it's an African-centered practice. So everything that we're doing has African techniques to it and African energy to it. So it's different from the Asian. It's not a quiet, you know, nice session. When you have a Raseki session, it's typically a lot of energy moving. You can hear it in the instruments and the music and the chanting and things like that. So we do have a lot of Usui people who have come forth, and they all have noticed that, you know, Raseki is just more powerful, just like everything else African. We just have more power to it.
Okay, made out there. And let us know in the chat room if that answered your question, if you had an additional question. Okay, you know, I'll say that. So I wanted to add, if you could, first, let's remind everybody, people came in late. We posted the website, www.rasekihealing.com, R-A-S-E-K-H-I, healing.com. Rakit Kajara has, you have 5 books out. So can you talk about your 5 books there? And, well, I guess you have 6 now because you said the level 3, but that's only for the people who are at the level 3. But the other 5 books, can you talk about the 5 books and let people know? Well, of course, they can purchase them from the website, but talking about the Raseki Level 1, Level 2, the children's book, recipe book, prayer book, all of those.
All right. We do have 5 books that are currently out and for sale right now. Raseki Level 1 is our manual for our Level 1 class, and it does have pretty much everything that I mentioned that was in Level 1. And so I like to say that this is a book that is not meant to sit on your bookshelf. It's meant to be used. And so we do have a recipe for a spiritual bath in the book. We have a libation, a sample libation that you can use to begin to, you know, get comfortable with pouring libation. We have the pictures of the hand positions. We have a beautiful chart with the information about the Aritu from a comedic or African-centered perspective. And so it's a power-packed book. It's a lot of information and a lot to process for people who are not familiar with that kind of information. And but it is very easy to read. It's not that long. We do have information and a couple of stories included in there by you as well, brother. So it's definitely good for ones who want to learn to restore their culture, restore the laws of Ma'at and the ways of Ma'at and the ways of our ancestors, and how we can learn to keep ourselves balanced and well, you know, naturally in using our energy. And we also have the Kemetic Reiki Level 2, and that one is another manual, which is for the Level 2 Kemetic Reiki class, and it has information about our healing sessions and how we do them, and our use of the pendulum. It's a nice pendulum chart in there. There's information about sound therapy and working with crystals. So, again, this is a book that is meant to be used. And even for people who do use Usui Reiki or other energy healing modalities, it can help, you know, add something to your medicine bag, give you some tools or techniques that you might not have tried. And these are things that we know work. It's some things in there you may not have seen before, but everything in there we have done, and we know that it works, and it works in a good way. Raiseki is a practice that can only be used to help and to heal. And so we also have, I believe the next book that came forward was the children's book, and that one I wrote myself as well. And it is called I Get Energy from the Sun, and it's a very good book to read to your children between the ages of, I would say, 1 or 2, until they can read themselves. It's a picture book. So it also has, the story is about teaching children how to understand energy and how we get energy from the sun and how the sun helps things grow, and we can use it for power, solar power, and we have energy within us called the Aritu. And I've been told that it's very good. It has sparked some good conversations between parents and their children about energy and about the aura and things like that. And these are things that our children should know about. They shouldn't have to wait to adulthood to learn about their aura. So we're very proud of that book. And then we also have a recipe book, and this book is a group project. So we have at least 10 of the people in our temple, members, practitioners, teachers, who included recipes. And the recipes for Elevation book is very unique because it has recipes for smoothies, for tonics. We have recipes for natural personal products like body butter and toothpaste and natural deodorant. We also have recipes for raw food and vegan meals. So it's very good for someone who is working to transition themselves to eat more healthy, and if they are ready to rid their homes of all the petroleum jelly products, then, you know, this book is also helpful for you in doing that as well. And that is part of our healing. You know, we have to stop running to the store and to the doctor for every little cold or every little ailment when we usually have things that we can use right in our kitchen or right around us, growing around us even in some cases. We just don't know about that. So the recipes for Elevation is a good one for that. And we have also just recently published a book of prayers. It's called Speaking with Spirit, and I am very proud of this book as well. It has prayers from ancient Kemet, prayers from West Africa, prayers from people from our temple. We have been blessed to have a prayer from Dr. Francis Crest Welsing included in the book. And so it's over 120 prayers, I believe. And I was inspired to publish this one, which is also a group project. I was inspired because I had some clients, some young people last year, who told me they didn't know how to pray. So I was telling them they needed to get their spirits together, and they were like, you know, I don't even know how to pray. And so, you know, this book was produced from that energy and in a effort to culture that has been such a strong part of our lives and our tradition, you know, the power of prayer and using words to shift energy and to manifest things is something that we've been doing for a long time, and we must make sure that our children learn to do it as well. So we're praying that this book will get out there to our community, especially to those who really need to learn how to pray, so that we can be praying to, you know, the gods and goddesses of our people and, you know, bring power to ourselves and our families. And so, yes, we also, as I said, I do have the Level 3 book, and at some point we might publish it to the public, but right now it's just for those who go through Level 3 and 4.
Okay. Okay, Mirase. I wanted to ask you about to go into well, first, of course, starting with Level 1, you have the information about the energy centers in the body. Often they're called chakras or chakras. We, of course, we, the people listening to the show know we put out some information showing that the term chakra, chakra, comes from kata kata in ancient Kemet, so of course it's not an Asian term. And the seven energy centers and the whole piece comes directly from our culture. So we prove that. Even the term Reiki, Rei meaning universal energy and so forth, and Ki meaning life force energy. Of course, Ki or Chi is a title of Ra and Kemet, meaning the exalted one. And then Rei is just a corruption of the way to pronounce Ra. Even the crackers even today still say Amun Rei instead of Amen Ra. So even the terms Reiki have nothing to do with Asians. They're just corruptions of our terms. But if you could talk about, like, just generally, for because a lot of people may have heard the term chakra, heard the term energy center, but the practice deals with balancing those, basically those shrines for the abosom, the orisha in your body. So if you could just talk about the seven major energy centers, like some basic information of, you know, going from the root to the crown, just for the people who are not familiar with that, and how important that is for the practice of Ra Sekhet.
All right. No, I don't mind at all. The energy centers, as you said, they are shrines for the abosom, sometimes even called the souls of Ra, and they are very important because they command and are connected to the organs and the glands that are located near those energy centers, and they're also connected to our elements and our senses and the planets and the days. And so it's important that we understand these major energy centers within us. The first one sits at the point where your legs meet. We call it the Sefket Center. It's also called the root center. And this is the point that is connected to the earth. It helps us to connect to the earth. It helps us to have ability to be stable, to be grounded, and to survive, to take care of ourselves. And it's connected to the great mothers, Yemoya, Ajua, and Aset. And so we see the color blue working to balance the center. Then we also have the what we call the Tek Center. It's at the point right beneath your navel. And as we go through these centers, you could just put your hand, one of your hands there, sit in a comfortable position, sit with your back straight, and use your hands, rub your hands together and build some heat up in them, so they can become sensitive to your energy. And then put your hand right beneath your navel and feel that energy at your Tek Center. This is the point that's connected to your reproductive organs. It's dealing with your ability to create. It deals with our sexuality and our relationships and our emotions. It's connected to the goddesses, the love goddesses, Heteru and Oshun, and the planet Venus. And then we move up and just breathe deeply and move your hand up to your OB center, which is located right beneath your rib cage. And feel that energy there. This is your own personal little sun, your place of fire. We call it OB. This place deals with our motivation, our drive, our will, our vitality. So when you know you need to do something but you don't do it, it's because your OB center is out of balance. You have a weak vitality. And you can use your hands and just stimulate it and see the fire within it to help reactivate it. This point is connected to our personal power, our Sekhem, and the goddess Sekhmet, and the planet Mars. And the day is Tuesday. It's a fiery energy. And breathe deeply and move your hand up to the center of your chest. This is the point we call Kepra, your heart center, the place of love. It also deals with your feelings, your ability to love yourself and to love others, and the energy of Ma'at and the other warriors, those that deal with movement and circulation and justice, Shango. And breathe deeply and move your hand up to your throat, right at that soft spot beneath your neck, at the bottom of your neck. It's your throat center. We call it Sekhem. When you say Sekhem, you can feel that motion in that center, that energy. When you're speaking, it's connected to communication, your ability to communicate intelligently. And the planet Mercury and Tahuti or Anansi works through this center. And breathe deeply and move your hand up to your forehead. In the center of your forehead is your first eye. We call it the Mer Center. And we call it the first eye because we really want to see with this eye first, because this is the point that deals with our intuition, our psychic powers, our imagination and dream state, and all those energies that deal with that aspect of ourselves and our subconsciousness. And breathe deeply. Move your hand up to the top of your head, to that place on babies they call the soft spot. That's the place of your crown, your Ik center. Ik. The place of your higher consciousness, your higher spirituality, higher connection, higher self. It deals with the highest spirits, Ran Ra'it, Ta, Amen, Arumila. The sun and the moon. And just breathe deeply and breathe out very slowly. Breathe in through your nose very deeply. And breathe out again very slowly. This time breathe in and focus on harmony and peace and just feel that energy of peace and harmony and hold it in. Let it circulate through your body. And then breathe out slowly. And breathe in again, breathing in that energy of peace and harmony. And hold it. And feel it moving up into your head and down to your heart, down to your lower organs. Just feel peace. And breathe out slowly. And now return to normal breathing. And I guess just talking about the Aritu just puts me in that place of guiding and sharing that healing energy. And if you're feeling too, we just had a session. If you feel it too spacey, you could put your hands at the very bottom of your feet and just bring that energy down and help you bring yourself back to yourself.
Made out there. I know people have some, you know, I'm sure some people have some experiences. If they want to, you know, ask some questions about it, you can, of course, post something in the chat room. Hit the number one for the people who just joined. Hit number one on the phone if you have a question or a comment. I wanted to ask you about the importance, because you mentioned in the book, in relationship to the kara, karu, or the so-called chakras, you mentioned the importance of colors associated with that. So can you just talk a little bit about the colors associated with the different centers? And for some people, if you're thinking about sometimes a way to think about it, the chakra centers or even the organs associated with the chakra centers, it's like the seven centers are like having seven cell phones in your body. And when your cell phones are connected, there's a strong signal, then you have receptivity. If you don't have a strong signal, then you can't connect with somebody on the other end. And the chakra centers are really, they're electromagnetic centers. On one hand, the nerve ganglia, the seven knots up and down the spine, the nerve endings, they're connected to the organs, and there's a literal physical connection to these seven different centers that you can that's measurable electromagnetically. Then, of course, there's shrines for the abosom that, of course, we're connected to by birth. But if you could share about the importance of the colors associated with the different centers.
All right. Well, colors, they vibrate at a certain frequency, each of them, and they definitely can affect our own frequency. And so, as you mentioned, they do each have their own color that is specific to them, and unlike the style that we might be used to hearing, we do see the colors that are associated with the deities and the planets associated with our Aritu. So with the Sefket, the root center, the primary color that we would use to balance that center would be blue. Most of the time it is seen as red, But if you use a lot of red with that energy, it can overstimulate a center that may already be overstimulated. So using the blue helps to balance it and soothe it, so to say. For the tech or the sacral center, the color that we most often use would be more of a green or gold color. Orange can be used, but we know that the deity Heteru and Oshun, they're associated with life and fertility and that green energy, that bright, beautiful energy. Bright colors work to help balance that center. With the Ob center, it is that fire energy, so we use yellow, but also red and gold to balance that center. And that's the solar plexus. Once again, the Ob center is what we call it. And with the Kepra, the heart center, we find green to be very helpful, as well as blue and red and white. And in some cases, the red can, again, be overstimulating. Red is very fiery. And so we are careful when working with that color. And with the heart center, just depending on the situation, sometimes it needs more fire, sometimes it does not. So you have to be, you know, careful and know what you're doing and working with the colors in that way. With the Sekhem or the throat center, we do work with yellow as well as red and even some black, because that color is associated with, that energy that Aritu is associated with, Eshu, and so and Set, and those energies also deal with that black energy. And black, again, is a color that we don't use as often because of its ability to absorb. So just depending on the situation, you might or might not want to have that absorption of the black color. Then we have the first eye, the Mer center, which we work with the indigo, but also white. And then that center is also helpful in dealing with the black because of the subconscious working through the darkness. It can be useful in some cases. With the ik or the crown, we work with the violet, but also the white, that white light, and also other metallic colors as well. And then the black. The black is, you know, the black dot from which we all come from, the blackness. So it can be useful in our healing practices.
Okay. And you mentioned that, like going back to the question the person had in the chat room, the differences between the way the typically you see in different books talking about, you know, certain colors for the chakra centers, but what connected you to, you know, focus more so on the colors that are sacred to the deities connected to those centers?
Well, my experience in working with the deities and with the colors, I just found it to be different. My own experience in working with the traditional ways just show me that they don't always work the way that they are written. So, you know, working with the deities, you'll find, like with the love goddesses, Heteru and Oshun, though they're from different traditions, they do share similar energy, and they both are from water energy and dealing with love and dealing with similar colors. So when I think about the deities, or my feeling and experience with them, is that they work on different rays, and those rays have certain colors themselves that they all kind of find intertwined. And so it's just from experience and from what I'm told as well. And usually everything that I'm told spiritually, I am shown a confirmation of it in some form or fashion as well to let me know that it is the truth.
Okay. Okay. And you also, I wanted to ask you about, so you use symbols, of course, But another difference is there's a difference of the symbols that you use in Ras Seki, which is different than what the Asians are doing. And then even when certain Asians use like a symbol with a circle with the dot in the middle, it's a different, of course, understanding, because of course they stole that and they really don't have a real understanding about the what it really is, that symbol for Ra, Ra-et. But can you talk a little bit about the symbols that are used in Ras Seki and how it came about that you use those symbols in the way that you use them?
Yes. Symbols are very important to us. Symbols speak to the soul, and so we know there are certain meanings for symbols, but as you work with them, you find there's even more to them. I was just reading a question from one of our new students, and she said, the more I work with the symbols, they seem to come alive, and I see them everywhere. And that is one of my experiences as well. The symbols are very important because they help to balance aspects of the brain and activate our mind and our energy in ways that only they can do when we work with them. And so working with them is to see them on a regular basis, to take time to focus on them. And the symbols that we were given to work with are symbols that I'm told some people have charged thousands of dollars to share with others. And so they're the raw symbols that we start with, which the circle with the dot, the triangle, and the cross, which are some of the most primordial symbols. They're symbols that equal 360 degrees. They have knowledge within them from ancient times, and you can find that only by working with them. And they work to balance the right and left hemispheres of the brain. There are so many things that those symbols can do. So we work with them in our healing. They help to restore energy, cells, muscles, all kind of things if you know how to work with them properly. And then the other symbols that we were directed to use are ancient Kemetic symbols. Many of us are familiar with the Ankh, and we know that it means eternal life, but we don't really even take the time to think about just the energy of that symbol and the energy that it radiates when you have it around or in your environment. That energy of life is just constantly being radiated because that symbol is so ancient and is so powerful. And if you only are aware of it, then you can actually keep that life flow energy in your home in a different way and in your own environment just by wearing it or having it around you, you know. And so there are other symbols, the eyes of Ra and Ra-et, the Kepra Abito, which is a symbol of transformation. We can't know how well they work until we work with them, and that's just like any other practice. But we definitely, you know, those symbols have been used from people in our bloodline. So they are specific for us, and we can only assume that we are just beginning to know how to use them. Even in many places in Africa today, they have their houses, you know, painted with certain symbols, and you know, certain families have certain symbols for their family line, and they have symbols on their clothes. And it's not just, you know, because they like it or because it's pretty. It's the energy of those symbols and what they represent, and the energy that they radiate when they're being used. So, yes.
Okay, may I say, I want to ask also, so when you mentioned on the website in the book that you're a community activist, but it's different, it's not just, you know, you go out and walk around with a picket sign and, you know, petition people or something like that. It reminded me, and I want to ask you about your experience in Chicago recently. We were talking about this, and I mentioned this to you, and I mentioned to some other people as well, and then they shared some experiences. Like, for example, I'm from Chicago, so there's a certain regions, there are differences in regions. Like, you can be driving through the city, and then you can cross over into a certain region, and you can feel the thickness and heaviness of the energy as soon as you cross a certain, border. And we noticed that just because we're engaged in spiritual practice, but then I would come in contact with other people, and they would say, without me even bringing it up or even talking about spirituality, they'll say, as soon as I cross into this area at this particular street, it's like walking into a heat wave of thick negative energy. Very often it's in areas where people have been murdered. This kind of spirit is still hanging around, and you can feel that. I connected with people here in the D.C., Maryland area, and when we're giving presentations and talking about, the murders that occur in certain areas, they'll bring up the same situation where they get to a certain area, they can feel the energy just even of the region because of the heaviness, and mainly because of all these discarnate earthbound spirits hanging around because they haven't made a transition to the ancestral realm, and they're full of anxiety. They're projecting that anxious, discordant energy into the atmosphere, and people who are a little bit receptive, just marginally receptive, can pick up on it. People who are very receptive, of course, get hit by it, and they can really feel it. So community activism goes beyond just, marching for, housing rights or something. It also has to do with trying to deal with these discarnate entities, disjointed entities who are influencing the thoughts, intentions, and behavior of people who are still on the street, sometimes influencing people to engage in criminal activity and all kinds of other stuff. So I know when you went to Chicago recently, you all did a ritual, like a communal ritual to try to address some of these things. So this is a different kind of community activism. So if you could share with the audience what you can about, what you all did in that regard in Chicago.
Yes, I will. I would say that on my journey, though, I have marched and done a few more things as a community activist, including teaching and Saturday schools and some more things. So these are just many different ways that we could be active in our community. And the energy in Chicago, I feel it as, or I have felt it as being a cloud. It's like a cloud of death because it's been so many lives lost, as you said, in particular areas especially. And I remember being at someone's house at one point, and I had a dream. I was sleeping and had a dream. It was probably one of the worst dreams I've ever had. And I remember just waking up, like, feeling the energy from a building that was next door. And all I could do was, find out what was going on with this building, because I just felt this dreaded feeling. And I was told that it was a building that had been like a crack building, and people had been killed and burned and dropped out the window, and all kind of stuff had happened. And I could just feel that, and I couldn't stay there long because I'm way too sensitive. But it is that kind of energy. And so we have, actually this was the second year that we did a community prayer for the city and for peace and for the spirits of the lives who have been lost to be at peace and to move on, because it seems like it's a feeling of those lost ones sucking up more of their friends and their brothers and sisters and family members into the realm that they're in. And so the work that we did was to help dissipate that cloud and to help shift that energy and, honor those spirits so that they can elevate a bit enough to move on to the next realm and clear the way so that that violence can stop. And it was very powerful. We had a lot of people to come out and support, and the women and the brothers were there, you know, and we sang and danced and did all we could, you know, listen and follow the spirits. And I do feel like we shifted that energy, you know. We all felt really good and really strong when it was over. And I am feeling like it, you know, we're going to keep that word on it, that we did make a shift on that day. And I believe there were several other organizations who were also doing things on that weekend. So it was, you know, as always, when it's something that needs to be done spiritually, the message would come to many, you know. And so that's how our ancestors would make sure things got done, to make sure, because you don't know who's going to listen and follow. But if you make sure you give the message to more than one, you'll make sure it gets done. So it felt like it was that kind of energy. And we do continue to pray for the city and for the people and families who lost their loved ones, and for those children who are still walking the streets up there. We pray for their protection on a regular basis in Chicago and everywhere else that they need it. We keep that up regularly as a temple.
Most definitely. Most definitely. That's, when people talk about the cycle of violence, that side of it has to be included, because that's a critical part of the cycle. If you just leave out those who have already been murdered and try to, you know, just work in the community and not recognize that those spirits are influencing people in the community, then we're missing, you know, a major part of it. I also wanted to ask you about assisting sisters with domestic abuse issues. Whether it's domestic abuse, domestic violence, sexual abuse, and assisting them with overcoming that negative attraction or mindset to, like, they feel like they can't break out of the situation and they keep finding themselves in the same situation. What kind of experiences have you had to assist sisters out of that negative cycle so they can liberate themselves through, you know, ritual practice?
Ooh, that is something that is very dear to my heart. I have been through an abusive relationship myself and was not able to stay long. I give thanks and praises. I don't have the will to stay for that. But I have also experienced and helped many women to move past the situation like that and to heal, because as you said, it is a cycle, and it seems as if it's a cycle that begins in the home when a child or female child, in this case, does not have a good relationship with their father. And not just if the father is not there, but if the relationship with the father is not good, it can lead to that woman attracting or wanting to be with men who are abusive in some way. And they will just continue until something happens to cause a shift and to cause them to seek for help in some form or fashion. And so we definitely work in counsel and help to pray and help to restore, you know, the woman's self-esteem. A lot of time, even her mind can be unstable from an abusive relationship. Her thinking processes can be off. You know, her value of herself is usually very low, and then her energy field is usually very low. Her aura, you know, is usually not strong at all. And so we have to work at rebuilding that energy from within, and even the spirit. Usually women in this who find themselves in these relationships don't have a strong spiritual connection. And so, you know, once again, restoring that connection to spirit. And, you know, that's more than just going to a church or a temple. It's connecting to spirit is about really feeling spirit for yourself, knowing that there is a higher power that guides and protects you and even gives you breath, you know, every morning. Or when you're born, you get that breath from that higher power. And so everyone has to feel it for themselves in order to truly be balanced and healthy. And bringing a sister to that place, it is not something that happens overnight. It takes a lot of time and a lot of work on that sister's part to be able to examine herself and not just look within, but then once you look within and see your own deficiencies and your own weaknesses, then you have to, you know, bring balance to those weaknesses, bring strength, you know, to yourself, and then bring strength to your heart and your mind once again, and be able to trust yourself to make better choices, and most definitely to love yourself, because in most cases, you know, when you don't have a value of yourself or you have a low self-esteem, you don't love yourself. And so just I've had a lot of women I've had to teach to love themselves, you know, because that's so important. When you don't have that, it can definitely cause you to make some poor choices, which can lead to a lot of trauma and drama. And so, yeah, we like to try to catch the sisters when they're young so they don't have to go through so much trauma and stuff because you know, that just takes a longer time to heal from. But we definitely work with women in these cases.
Definitely, that's, you know, that's a powerful work. It's pervasive. You know, so we just appreciate the fact that you all are in the trenches doing that work day in and day out on a regular basis. I want to ask you about the experiences you have. You mentioned in the beginning about the different retreats that you have. So, of course, you have the sessions, individual healing sessions, you have the group healing sessions, you have training, but then you also have retreats. You've had a number of different retreats, some on the solstice, some at different times. So what is the experience at the retreats, and what are the different activities that you all partake in?
All right, the retreats are really a beautiful experience for all of us. And we usually do level one and level two comedic Reiki classes. We have been doing about 3 to 4 retreats per year since 2010. We do the solstice retreat. That's an annual one that happens every year around the summer solstice. And then there's other ones that we do. And the retreats are an opportunity for us to come together and share in our healing experiences. So we have raw food for the retreat, which gives our bodies a chance to clear itself and to raise your vibration. Basically, when you eat a lot of heavy food, it's very hard to take in and deal with the spiritual work and energy because the heavy food will weigh you down. So eating raw and eating light is one of the highlights of the retreat for everyone. We also start off with our morning rituals, and we encourage everyone who works with the temple to begin to create their own morning rituals. I also have a video on YouTube about morning rituals. You know, most of us were raised up to get up and wash your face and brush your teeth and eat and run out the door. And really, in the mornings, you want to give yourself that spiritual armor, and so take some time to exercise and pray, meditate, and chant, things of that nature. So we always do that in the mornings, usually a nice session of comedic yoga and some breathing sessions. And then we move on into the class work, we always make a spiritual bath for the group, and this is a bath that ones usually give themselves, but we have the experience so that everyone knows how to make a spiritual bath, because that is very important. When you take the physical bath, you clear the physical dirt, but the spiritual bath clears that unseen energy. So that's something that every mother should know how to do, and fathers too. Make that spiritual bath. And then we also do other clearing rituals depending on where we are. Sometimes we would do a sweat lodge. Sometimes we do rituals outside at the oceanfront if we're there. We do the sand burial ritual. We also do the body wraps. We do ear candling. We do, I'm pretty sure I'm leaving out something, but it's always the classwork, the purification rites, and all of those purification rites, we do them because each of those activities help us to reconnect with certain elements. It helps us to clear layers of stuff that need to be cleared from our auric field, stuff that needs to be cleared from our emotions, from our minds, and, of course, our bodies. So, you know, a big part of our work is about clearing and purification, and that's really what we focus on at those retreats. Then we also have the group healing sessions. So when we do the level one and two classes, the retreats usually include that certification for level two as a practitioner. And so everyone who comes has an opportunity to practice on others, practice Raseki, and they have an opportunity to get on the table themselves and receive a group healing session. And so that is one of the highlights, I'm sure, for everyone, because that is a chance for people to just let go and release and to really renew themselves before going back, you know, to their homes. And then, of course, we do have the certification or the blessing ceremony at the end, which is another divine highlight for the weekend. So we do have retreat coming up in October. We're going to be going to the Las Vegas area, and we are going out there because we want to also visit. They have a temple for Sekhmet that is in that area, so we're going to have a little pilgrimage, so to say, out to that shrine of Sekhmet while we're there in the area. We're also going to do the Kemetic Reiki Level 1 and 2 classes, and this retreat has a special treat included because we're going to have Dr. Akua Gray of A Life of Peace, who is a beautiful sister. She is going to be preparing the raw food for us at the retreat, and she is also going to share some information about holistic sexuality, and she just wrote a book about holistic sexuality. So the retreat in Las Vegas is the weekend of October 24th through the 27th, and the registration is open for that retreat right now. It's definitely going to be a powerful experience for everyone who attends. Dr. Akua and I did many retreats together back in 2006, 2007, 2008, and so I'm very excited to be working with her again. She is a beautiful sister, a powerful teacher and healer, and a beautiful spirit. So the Raseki family is going to really have a good time and do some good healing and share, learn, grow. And you might want to join us on that weekend. And that information is on our website, therasekihealing.com. Okay. We also have, while I'm on the subject, our next retreat, after the one in Las Vegas is scheduled for Barbados. So there are some people there in Barbados who have been asking us to come there for at least 2 years, and we are praying that we're going to be able to manifest this one this year, and that is scheduled for December 4th through the 8th, and the trip to Barbados is going to include a stay for, I believe it's 4 nights and 4 days, and we are going to have the full moon with us that weekend, so we're going to do some full moon ceremony as well as enjoy the beauty of the island and do the certification classes. So we'll have some people who are from Barbados to join us, and we also invite you to join us on that divine retreat, and that information is on the Raseki Healing site as well.
Okay, and that's and we posted that in the chat room, and there is another question in the chat room. They say, how do you get assisted that you think is facing emotional trauma, one who had a disconnected relationship with her father at a young age, to realize she doesn't have self-love within herself? What approach could someone use to make her realize this, when you can clearly see it with the choices that she makes and always asks you that she needs a man to love her exactly the way she wants to be loved? He said, what approach? Because her father never gave her certain emotional affection or love. And by the way, for people who are in the chat room or listening, you know, via the internet, there's 8 more minutes on the live streaming on the internet, and then it will cut off. So if you want to continue to listen, if we go a few minutes over 11, you would have to call in to listen on the phone. So you have like 7.5 minutes. The call-in number is 657-383-0635. 657-383-0635. So that question about a sister facing emotional trauma, had a disconnected relationship with her father, making bad choices, the person can see it, but she can't see it, and she always thinks she needs a man to love her, and so forth. He's asking, or the individual is asking, what approach would you utilize? But then, and you went into some of that, but how have you all gone about it? I know you said you had a number of different things you had to address with the sisters who are going through these different issues, but what kind of approaches did you use?
Well, you know, because we work with Ma'at, we always come with the truth. And that is something that we might not be used to doing in our families, in our community. We tend to beat around the bush or not really say what we mean to say a lot of times. But honestly, working with honesty, and if you're noticing that she has these things going on, then having those conversations straight up, you know, is usually the best way, not doing it in a way that is hurtful, you know, carefully choosing your words, and then also sharing information, because, you know, when you do bring up a weakness in someone, you don't want to just leave them there with that. You want to be able to suggest some things that they can use to help strengthen that weakness. So once you information, then you want to bring forth something like the Sacred Woman book, the Heal Thyself book by Queen Afua. Either one of them are very good. Also, the Raseki Kemetic Reiki book is very good for one to begin that path. I also have some videos on YouTube that talk about loving yourself and healing from depression or trauma. But basically, you know, we just really need to learn to communicate with each other a lot better. And that means being straightforward, not being hurtful, but just being honest. about what you're seeing, and in sharing it in a loving way, you might get a different reaction than what you expect to get. And sometimes people go into not to denial when you tell them about themselves. They don't want to hear it, but you know, they might hear your voice a few days later. They'll hear that echo, and that voice will ring out. And usually, if they do have a conscience at all, it will play back enough for them to do something about it, especially if you have something right there handy for them to use. Ayanna Van Zandt also has a series of books that are very good for women to help restore balance, you know, The Value in the Valley, and I'm sure there's a few more. But I find that reading, because, you know, we have to affect our mind. And when we're in a certain place or a certain mind state, what can we do to shift that mind state is reading something else. We have to put something else into our mind. So if we're constantly watching soap operas and drama on TV, most of the time it's going to cause us to have a drama-filled life, because that is what we're putting into ourselves. When we want to shift that and we're tired of the drama, we turn the TV off, and then we feed our brain something that's helpful. And there's plenty of self-improvement positive books out there right now, even videos that you can watch and suggest. But always come when you're coming to with information to help someone and you notice something, they got a problem, always come with a solution or some suggestions for them as well, because that will help them to take it and receive it a lot better. And I do also want to add, we have a sale going on our books right now. In the Speaking with Spirit book, a book of prayers, is always helpful for any mental instability anyone is dealing with or other behavior problems. They're all available for free shipping this month. So this is a good time to go ahead and stock up on your books. We are definitely encouraging our community to get back into reading and to turn off those television programs and all that garbage that they have putting out. You know, they're putting out stuff that is ridiculous. I really don't watch TV much myself, but just from what I hear, you know, it's not good for us. So we need to turn those TVs off and read more, and read stuff that's going to help you, not just the trashy novels, but stuff that can help you and your family and make you more healthy and more strong. That's the time that we're in right now.
Most definitely. Absolutely. And let us know in the chat room if that answers the question. If you have another, you know, a follow-up. Okay, and there was a question in the chat room. I think the brother came in late. He was just asking about, does the system deal with the Karuta chakras? Which, yes. And we just sent that. So if you look in the Rasteki level one book, and then the sister was just talking about, just a few minutes back, talking about the different chakras, the different colors associated with the different Karakaru. He also asked, is the biofield in this system the same as the Obra, which is in Akan, Obra is the same as the Ba, or the spirit, in ancient Kemet. So, yes, it's talking about the same thing. And then just to reiterate, even with the name Rasteki, you talked about how it came into being, but just talking about your connection with Ra and Sekhmet, as well as you connected with Oya and Shango as well. So if you could talk about that just briefly. I know we only got a couple of minutes left, but if you could address that real quick.
My connection with Ra and Ra-et, I feel my strength, you know, I'm definitely a child of the sun. And my energy manifests as a messenger of Sekhmet at this time. I am one who works with ancestors. I am one who works with the great mothers and many goddesses. I also work with the elements, and I work with the fire energy. So my connection with Shango is mostly an ancestral connection. I have many ancestors who worship Shango for many years, and I am one who came forth in this time to reconnect my family lineage with that energy of Shango. But I also am one who fights for justice and for the right, as Shango and Sekhmet both do. And so I was just born into it when I read about, you know, the day I was born as a Ya person who fights for the right, who is an aggressor. I'm not one to just sit down when something is going wrong. I'm going to stand up and say, hey, that's not right, you know. So that's just my nature.
Okay. May I say? So we have, actually, it is 11 o'clock. The live stream just cut off. So what we're going to do, if there aren't any other questions, I just want to check the chat real quick. And, okay. So we just want to say, may I say, Kajar, for coming on. We, you know, really appreciate you taking the time to share the information with us. And everybody go to rasekihealing.com, rasekihealing.com. Order the books, Raseki Level 1, Raseki Level 2, I Get Energy from the Sun, the children's book, Speaking with Spirit, the prayer book, and the recipes book, those different five books, the training sessions, individual sessions, the retreats, all of the information you find on rasekihealing.com, as well as what is your username on Facebook?
We have a Raseki Arts Temple page on Facebook, also on Twitter and Instagram, and we also have the website at rasekistore.com, and that is the site that you can get the books with the free shipping this month.
Okay. So everybody check that information out. And one of our sisters, who was a consistent sister, Sister Ngi Deka, said, truly have loved and appreciated your presentation tonight. Give thanks and Yidase for checking us out. And again, Yidase for coming on. You can come back whenever you want to and share some more information. We covered a lot of information tonight. We very much appreciate it. And we will see you very, very soon. Medase for coming on with us.
Medase, I thank you so much for inviting me, and I would love to come on again soon. We'll have to schedule another day.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Okay, and for everyone listening, once again, the people came in a little bit later, just a quick announcement. We will be in Philadelphia presenting this Memenida this Saturday, August 9th, at the Philadelphia Sankofa Festival. That's an all-day festival, free festival, from 12 p.m. to 6 p.m. There'll be vendors, you know, cultural items, clothing, food, all different kinds of Afurakani, Afurakaini businesses, cultural presentations, a number of different things, a community event, outdoor event, talking about ancestral culture from the Akan perspective, but also as well as other Afurakani, Afurakaini cultures as well. We have been honored to have been invited to keynote that specific festival, so we will be speaking probably around the middle of the festival, probably 3, 3:30, something like that. But you can bring your children out. It's going to be a great day. And we have the information on the ojidafo.com website, the e-flyer. And if you have any questions, just hit us up on ojidafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F, as in free, O.com. May I say, for listening to us, coming, you know, checking out the show, of course, we will be back on next Benada, Abenada, which is Tuesday, for Ojida, purification, and then the following day, Abukuda or Akuada, Wednesday, for the Egua Marketplace show every week, same time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, all of the archives from all of our previous shows, we've done about 22 shows since May 27th. All of the archives are there to check out for Blog Talk Radio. And then, of course, we also have our soft cover books. We just released 3 more a couple of weeks ago, so now we're up to 10 soft cover publications. Go to ojidafo.com on the Nhoma page, the publications page. You can see the 10 books. You can order those. You can also download the e-book versions as well. And just if you have any questions, connect with us on our website as well as our Facebook page, afuraka.afuraikaet. And then we also have our own social network, afuraka-afuraikaet.ning.com. And in fact, all of our guests are connected to us, of course, on Facebook, but also through our social network as well. So you can connect with our guest, Sister Kajara, who presented tonight, as well as the previous guests as well, are connected through that social network. So, again, yet I say we thank you for tuning in, and we will connect with you all next week. Yebeshia.